Welcome to Capital Radio by CFunds. I'm Liz.
And I am Lieke. And in this podcast, we demystify the world of private equity and venture capital. As a globally active fund placement agency, every day we meet interesting people from all over the world. We want to share their stories with you.
Our guests are experienced investors and fund managers that will tell us what it takes to enter the black box of private equity. Today's guest is Alexandra Malmberg, who is the principal in charge of the startup and VC fund portfolio at Hafler Family Office. Based in Stockholm, she is responsible for Hafler's portfolio companies, network, and deal flow. Alexandra has mentored companies from different Scandinavian accelerators, such as Rockstart Agri-Food, Sting, and Kiwas. Alexandra has a BSc in Business Management from an Uppsala University, including studies at Singapore Management University. Previously, she worked as a digital marketing consultant. Welcome, Alexandra.
Welcome.
Thank you, guys.
Great to have you. Alexandra, you have been a friend of CFunds for a couple of years now, and we know that your journey into the world of investing is slightly atypical. And for CFunds, it's a little bit of the same, so we appreciate that. Could you share with our listeners how you ended up in the world of VC and investing?
Yes, absolutely. And first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. Such a pleasure to be here and speak about a subject that we all really love and are fascinated by. My way into VC was a bit unusual, as it was a bit of an unusual journey compared to the normal investment banking or management consultancy route. When I was done with my studies in Uppsala, I was really lost in terms of what I wanted to pursue after my graduation. And it felt like all of my friends were either becoming audit associates or management consultants, and I didn't feel like I fit into either of those two categories. So basically, I just thought to myself that I need to get some more inspiration in terms of what other professions there are out there. And just like, there's obviously so much more fun stuff to do, but I just don't know what they are or how to get exposed to it. And I also figured that I would need to do a master's to qualify for the positions I was interested in. But I just didn't want to choose something without actually making the active choice of choosing that path, sort of. So I thought to myself, who on a junior level gets best insight into an organization and is exposed to everything that happens in an organization? I thought to myself, well, that's an executive assistant, of course, because they're part of usually everything that involves a business and a company. So I started out and applied for a bunch of different EA roles and came across Hafler on LinkedIn, and they had wrote this really nice ad about looking for their next unicorn employee. And I thought, well, this is different. And I applied and got hired a week later, basically. And it's been a fantastic journey ever since. So I started working out with Martin, who is the owner and founder of Hafler, who was one of the first partners of a large VC fund here in the Nordics called Creandum. So I've been, for my first year, I was just shadowing him and learning from an industry legend, which of course was a huge learning curve, basically a very steep learning curve. And, but both he and I kind of quickly realized that if I were to stay here, an EA role wouldn't be what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life, basically. And that's when I took over on the startup investments that we do at Hafler.
Excellent. And it's, you know, incredible to hear, I guess, and Martin would have seen in you a bit of a blank slate, perhaps, Alexandra, like you're really, really there to learn without having, yeah, been shaped too strongly by kind of, yeah, studies and the parameters, I guess, that people learn in lectures and out of textbooks. You know, from the outside looking in, or even now that you are in, what qualities do you think are necessary to thrive as an investor in venture capital? And what do you see and Martin, or the people around you, and in yourself?
Well, I definitely think that it's a short answer, and that is that you have to be an excellent relationship builder in order to be a good venture capital investor. I would say you have to be able to spot the people who will truly make a difference in and really go the extra mile needed, as you do when you're starting a startup. So you have to be able to be an excellent relationship builder and spot opportunities in people who might not even have realized it themselves in a way, and really be able to see and spot the potential in the founders you meet. it also requires, you know, excellent relationships with not only startup founders, but also LPs and investors into your fund and other stakeholders that could be important for both your companies that you invest in, but also yourself to have a good relationship with. We have to be a people's person, I would say, excellent at building relationship. And also, I think one of the most important jobs of a VC investor is to help the founder sort of keep eyes on the prize in a way. It's very easy for a founder or a CEO to get lost in operations, and like sticking to the strategy or the tactics is sometimes pretty hard when you have like day to day interrupting you or giving you a curveball every once in a while. And if you're an active investor or a board member or even a board chairman, you could help with that. Making founders realize that sometimes you actually have to say no to customers in order to keep on the trajectory you're on, which could be sometimes pretty difficult to do yourself. But if you have good investors to help you sort of lift the gaze and always continue back to the strategy, I think that's super helpful. Yeah. Also, lastly, I would say that a good VC investor is also somebody who has figured out what their value add is and then deliver on it.
Yeah, really interesting to hear your thoughts on this. And for us as a placement agent, relationships are, of course, also central and really important to what we do, both from the fund size side and the LP side. So it's also interesting that you mentioned that. So for Heflo, it's a family office. Could you maybe tell a bit about the Heflo ethos and what it is that you invest in?
Yes, of course, would be more than happy to. So as you mentioned, Heflo is a family office that is founded and owned by Martin Hauge, who I mentioned earlier in another question as well. And we are a single multi-asset family office that invests in a multitude of different asset classes. We have a very diversified portfolio. We do, however, have a very strong sort of background and DNA with venture capital and that kind of investment. So prior to Martin being part of the early days of VC fund Creandum, he was also a serial entrepreneur. So we've been really having this sort of entrepreneurial spirit from day one. And one of the reasons as to why Martin decided to leave Creandum and start Heflo was that he wanted to have more time to allocate to the founders that he invests in and actually being part of their fund journey a bit more closely than you have time for when you're a VC, because it's a lot about finding the new deals in that kind of environment, basically. So the idea of being close to the founders and close to the businesses we invest in has really permeated our investment philosophy. And that's why on the venture capital side of things that we invest in, we want to stay close both to the VC funds we invest in. And there we're currently backing 19 different VC funds with 10 different fund managers. And the same with the startups as well. We want to be an active sparring partner from pre-seed stage until you reach around Series A. And that's when we feel that, you know, you should be handing over the guidance and the support to the next batch of investors, basically. And that is what I get to focus on. And of course, don't tell anyone, but I, of course, think the venture capital side of Heflo is the most fun one. But as I mentioned, we are a diversified family office. So in addition to the startups and the VC funds, we also invest heavily into hotel and tourism and are currently part of a super exciting project in Norway with thoughts and future hopings for sustainable tourism going forward, and super exciting new projects that are happening as well. And in addition to the hotels and the VC funds, we also have a large pool of money deployed on the more traditional stock market and more traditional asset classes, but that's not something that I include in my day-to-day operations.
Super. And maybe zooming into the most fun aspect of VC fund investment. Can you maybe explain to us and our listeners how Heflo does things a little bit differently with respect to your approach between direct investments and primary investments, as well into the regions and geographies you invest into?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in terms of starting out with the startup investments, perhaps we are a very early stage investor. So our sweet spot is even around angel stage, pre-seed stage. So we consider ourselves to be a bit of an angel on steroids, because we usually invest in the same stage as angels, but we have bigger pockets and more resources to follow on and stay relevant on the cap table than most angels, I would say. So that's definitely one of our large sort of advantages as an investor from that point of view. And we also want to stay active with the companies we invest in. So preferably a board seat or some way that we can, you know, really make a difference for the founders that we invest in. So, you know, we like to roll up our sleeves and work with the companies, which is also then the kind of companies that we're looking for, where we can also add value in terms of our expertise. But given them that we invest in the early startup stage, we also have flipped the model a bit in terms of how we see the relationship between startups and the venture capital funds we invest in. So traditionally, family offices love to invest in venture capital funds and then being able to sort of cherry pick the winners from the VC fund that they want to follow up in or like come in as a new investor. But we kind of want to do it the other way around. So we want to spot the best early stage companies, help them and take them from like a angel stage to somewhere around like a Series A. And then we would love for the relationships we've built with venture capital, the venture capital funds that we had, to sort of pick them up and help them on their next company journey, basically.
Yeah, interesting to hear your approach on that. So I think in general, allocation decisions, especially that of a more flexible family office like yours, can sometimes feel like a black box for certain VCs or entrepreneurs. Could you share with us what your selection criteria typically look like, specifically for those really, really early stage companies, for example, that you speak about? It would be really interesting to hear what you look at.
Absolutely. Sorry, do you mean for the venture capital funds we invest in or for the startups?
I think both. Both would be really interesting to hear. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. But I mean, if you start up with the VC funds, I would say that, you know, we spoke earlier about what makes a great VC investor. So obviously, we want to see people who are excellent relationships builders in the fund. And not necessarily everyone have to be it. I mean, like, you can have different assets in a fund the same way you do in a company, but there needs to be a clear understanding of the importance of relationships within the VC fund that we are investing in. And we also are looking for super skilled people who are going to spearhead this next wave of innovation, basically. And of course, then it's super interesting to get a good understanding of what it is that these people have figured out about a market or a vertical or a geography or a customer segment that no one else has. Like, what is their, you know, you speak of a secret sauce in startup companies fairly often. It's, I would dare to argue that it's the same for VC funds and the partners and the team associated with that, is that they also need to have some sort of edge that is unique for them. And that is also because, I mean, it's fierce competition these days for VC funds to invest in top deals. And, you know, just allocating capital isn't cutting it anymore. So there needs to be something else that you can bring to the table. That area of expertise is super interesting from us. One, from also, of course, a sort of return on investment perspective, because we do believe that the people who are the most skilled will in this field sort of will bring the best company and investments out of it as well. But also, I mean, we are obsessed with our own learning here at Huffalo, and the VC funds that we invest in is a great way for us to get a better understanding of perhaps a new field or a new vertical or a new market or geography or, again, customer segment. So we're also very much looking for what it is that you as a VC fund can sort of teach us, and in what way can you teach us new stuff for Huffalo as well. Is it through your quarterly reports? Is it LP meetups or annual meetings? Or what is the sort of teaching setup for us as well, which we really, really value? And then for the startups, it's the usual, I would say, VC criteria that we look at as well. It's team, product, and market. It has to be an excellent team doing something in a market that's big enough to host several competitors. And of course, a product that, you know, you want to engage with or you can see potential in, basically. But given the stage that we invest in, you know, we almost expect our companies to pivot as we are in the angel stage. So for us, we are obsessed with great execution-oriented people who's looking to do something in an exciting market, I would say.
So, Alexandra, going back to a couple of previous questions before, when you spoke about that interplay with making direct investments and then almost pulling those founders into the funds that you already work with, I wanted to ask, how much are you already lining up those relationships from the get-go? Or, like you said, if the entrepreneurs have to pivot so quickly, are you just expecting at some point that maybe the match will be made?
Yes. So on that question, I would start by saying that building relationships with other investors is super important. And it's definitely something we want to introduce early on for our entrepreneurs, regardless if they want to pivot or perhaps even especially if they think that they might need to pivot, because, you know, staying close to investors and continuously updating them on your sort of on your journey and what's happening in the company sets you up in a really, really strong position when you actually need to fundraise. And I think actually a really telling parallel, or like a really explaining parallel in this scenario, is that I definitely think you can see some very strong similarities between VC funds and entrepreneurs, and also two people who are dating, because as a startup, you have to play hard to get. So it's absolutely best to start building relationships with new investors when you don't actually need to fundraise, right? Because there's nothing that sparks a VC's interest more than saying that you don't need their money, basically. That's really how you get their attention. And, you know, you make they will jump through hoops to speak with you, right? So I would say one of the most important tasks that I, as an early stage investor, have is to prepare the founder, and especially if it's a first-time founder, for what to expect ahead on this journey, because it's a bit of a roller coaster ride, right, to raise external capital, and then also to make sure that they feel comfortable enough maneuvering this process going forward as well. And then, of course, hopefully so comfortable that they will be able to play hard to get in investor meetings as well.
Yes, I absolutely understand it can be definitely a roller coaster ride. So maybe, Alex, looking more closely into one of the kind of verticals you invest in, we understand there's lots of network-based or social businesses in your portfolio. Can you speak to us about that vertical and maybe some trends that you're seeing there?
Of course, it's definitely one of my my interests and passions with network-based businesses. So for one who is curious and want to like deep dive into this field, I think it's Andreessen Horowitz that I've written an excellent blog series on why network-based or social businesses are forces to truly be reckoned with. And I can really recommend the read. It's super interesting. But basically, the idea of network-based businesses is that the best version of all kind of consumer products is the one that is intrinsically social. And you could even go as far as to say that if you want to be a category winner in your consumer field, the product has to be powered by social interaction. I think we've seen sort of similar messages being sent in this industry as well, with, you know, the rise of community-driven startups, and that's really been on the tapestry for the last few quarters as well. And it's simply because people love to connect and interact with other people who share their passion and interests, and that is sort of the core of social and community-driven companies. And the sort of beauty with intrinsically social products or companies is that they outperform their non-social competitors by far in terms of retention and the ability to sort of create feedback loops. And that is also why it's one of the most powerful ways to be able to create a truly sticky product and experience for your consumers or customers. And that is also why you in network-based companies can see true exponential growth. Because if I as a consumer find real value and like true happiness out of using a certain product or service, I will definitely want to tell my friends about it and invite them to the service, because I genuinely think that this is a product or service that will be good for them. And that's really how you get that sort of like, you know, coefficient in the growth as well. But the problem I often see when I, you know, when you have these kind of businesses pitched to you is that they start with the network. So they come to you and they tell you like, you know, yeah, we sort of like, if you were to come pitching the phone, right? Like, yeah, we want to, this is going to be a fantastic service once everybody has a phone. But if nobody has a phone, you won't be able to sort of sell the idea of this company, right? There needs to be a perceived value out of using a service to sort of kickstart the network effect. So that needs to be an amazing experience or something to truly be enjoyable, even for the first user interacting with your product or service. So that's why I always encourage people who want to sort of do this social startup or like this network-based company, that you need to focus on the product and the product experience initially. And that should be a kick-ass experience in itself. And then the mentality should be that, you know, you have users come into your business for the tool, but they stay for the network and for the social relationships that they build up in your service.
Yeah, I think it's really, really fascinating to see how quickly these social networks can grow. Like TikTok, for example, I think it's absolutely exploding around the world. So that is quite incredible to see. So as you mentioned, this kind of social network aspect is part of the consumer kind of vertical that you look at. Could you tell a bit more about this consumer segment in general that you looked at investing at Heflow?
Yes. So I think, you know, in terms of conviction from an investor standpoint, it comes down to personal preference when investing in a B2B or B2C company. But I would like to argue that the market for B2C oriented investors is a bit underserved, because I think consumer companies have, in my opinion, a bit of an unwarranted reputation these days, because they are perceived to be, you know, more volatile and definitely perhaps not as a stable as a B2B company. B2B companies have longer sales cycles, but, you know, the retention and the customer stickiness is completely different. So I do think many investors tend to favor that kind of predictability in B2B ARR, for example. But personally, I love the possibility of speed, which consumer startups offer. And it's truly amazing to see how quickly things can grow with the right team in a consumer company, where they can really, you know, test new features and you can see the true velocity out of that. And that is amazing. And you rarely see it blow up the same way sort of with that quickly with B2B companies, which I think is crazy cool to be part of in that way. Also, you know, consumer companies are also usually allowed to be a bit more passion driven than B2B companies. So consumers are willing to spend a lot more on what they're passionate about, which I would argue makes sort of the manifesto for a B2C company easier to write than a equally good B2B company. So the fact that you're allowed to be a bit more passionate and, you know, be able to also communicate that to other potential stakeholders is amazing as well. So recruiting for something that people are excited about is, of course, a lot easier. That's, I think it comes down to personal preference in the consumer space, I would argue.
Yeah. It sounds, yeah, it's an empowering message, I think, Alexandra, because we all want to feel like we can make a difference in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So if there's something that really, you know, you can directly take part in, that you can see an impact, then that's definitely worthwhile of participating.
Absolutely.
I think as a lead on to that, maybe, you know, we're super interested to hear about your investment in Sogal as an example of such. Can you maybe tell us more about what they do and why, yeah, the ethos behind the investment?
Yes, absolutely. So Sogal is a American Singaporean fund that's based out of New York and Singapore, of course, then naturally. And it's two amazing female managing directors, Pocket Sun, Elizabeth Galbert, who are on the journey of investing into diverse teams with products and services that are global first, human centric, community powered. We love community, yes. Sustainability minded, and sort of services and products for the millennial category, which I think is a hugely interesting take on an investment scope to sort of stake out the customer group in a way and then find products and services that they would like. And they invest mainly in female founders, and their fund is one of our top performing funds. Like, we've invested into many of the top European VC funds, and of course outside of Europe as well. We have in Southeast Asia, we have in Tel Aviv, in the US, and in Europe, different fund managers. But they are, despite the fact that they're two female fund managers and investing primarily in women, they are one of our top performers and have invested into companies like Everly Well and Function of Beauty, who are two unicorns as we speak, basically.
Yeah, nice to hear. And cool that such a specific type of focus of a company can be so successful. And to move away a bit from this company example, I know you are all about fun, but we also see in the market that the current valuations are rising a lot. And we were wondering, how are you seeing the current situation in the markets and its effects?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be seeing something too drastic in the too near future, but I am a bit of a pessimist as in terms of where we stand today. You know, I think it's the market is due for some correction in one way as well. Last year, I mean, Crunchbase reported that $116 billion was raised by European startups in 2021, which was a 159% increase compared to 2020. And I mean, just the amount of capital and the valuations we're seeing today are, in my point of view, due for a correction. When that's going to happen, I don't know, but I do expect us to see something in the coming future. It's also very interesting. I've heard some indications now from companies looking to raise in the States that they've found it a bit harder as well, given the climate that we're in, and not due to lack of capital, more perhaps to a bit more of a reserved attitude towards early stage startups. And usually Europe is about 3 to 6 months behind of the US. So I would expect perhaps that to sort of permit our investment climate here as well, that VC funds are going to be a bit more perhaps hesitant in terms of too risky new companies. But I mean, then again, the best fund managers and the best companies will always be able to secure capital. That's not going to change.
Yeah. Curious to see where the future is heading. Alex, thanks so much. This was the first section of the interview. And now we'll move to the second part, which is the fire rounds.
Wonderful.
So we will ask some really short questions and hope that you can also answer in short answers. So if you're ready, we will get started.
Yeah, let's go.
What is your morning coffee order?
An Americano, please.
Perfect. And if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
To read people's minds.
Cool. What book are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading Humankind by Rutger Bergman.
Nice. And name three traits, please, that make a successful LP.
Patience. Let's see. Patience is the one that's in my head popped up immediately. But I think patience, understanding your value add as well as an LP, and looking out for the fund managers that you have invested in.
Nice. Thanks, Alex. Moving on to the last part, I'm going to name a few topics. And if you could just let us know whether you think the topics are overrated or underrated. So just whatever pops first in your mind. The first thing I'll start with is a 2% GP commitment.
Neutral.
Nice. What about Swedish cinnamon buns?
Oh, underrated immensely.
Perfect. And TikTok?
Oof, overrated.
Right. And what about in-person GP due diligence?
Immensely underrated.
Right. What about Oatly?
Overrated. I'm sorry, I'm going to be skinned now. I'm Swedish and it's a Swedish company. But I'm not an Oatly girl.
No, you're an Americano girl.
Yeah, exactly. There you are. One.
All right. And finally, what about family office events?
Hugely underrated, I would say. We want to get together more.
Perfect. All right, that was it. Thanks so much, Alexandra, for your time and for providing us with a really valuable insight, I think, into the black box, which is, family offices. We really love speaking with you and what keeps you occupied and your expectations for the future. So looking forward to seeing what comes out.
Thanks so much, Alexandra.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure.